hear me great.
Okay. R started. It's 2 o'clock, and your first board meeting of Desert Community Energy. Welcome. And I'll run the first 6 minutes of the meeting, and then a chairman will run the rest of the meeting, if that's okay with the board. We are audio taping these meetings, and we audio tape all of our meetings, and unless our board tells us otherwise, that will be our record of the meeting, along with summary minutes. We do typically at CVAD, we do action minutes, so we don't spend a whole lot of time transcribing what can be long meetings. Work for everybody? Roll call. Ben, you want to do this? I'll do it. Cathedral City. Here. Palm Springs.
Here.
Palm Desert.
Here.
And Desert Hot Springs is not here yet, just so everybody knows. They're not officially a member of the CCA just yet. But we'll talk more about that. We'll also do a Pledge of Allegiance, but we didn't bring a real flag. Do we have a faux flag, Ben? Or?
No, we didn't put it on here.
Well, I guess everybody stand up.
We can pretend.
Where's the city of Palm Desert?
There's
a flag in the background of that picture.
Sabby, can you lead us? There we go. Sabby, can you lead us?
Yes. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Public comments. This is the time for public comment for any item that is not on the agenda. Do we have any takers? Seeing none, and again, this is a relatively informal thing. We do have one member of the public here, I believe, and you're welcome to, if you have a question or anything on the remainder of the agenda, just get our attention.
Thank you.
Director comments. Anything from the three directors that are in attendance. You don't have much from staff other than to acknowledge your staff and not just at CVAG, but at all of the cities. It might seem like a really long time it took us to get this together, but we're ahead of everybody else we started with. And I think a lot of that came from Katie's pushing and prodding. So thank you, Katie.
Thank you. Pushing and prodding. Come on.
Very politely pushing and prodding.
She's been great at the record reflect.
She really has. So thank you, Katie, for all the hard work. We added this to her list of duties at CVAG, which reminds me of a conversation I had with Lori. Thank you, Lori, and Charlie as well, for adding this and for that for all the staff of the cities. So we know this is an extra item that's been on your agendas as well. That was not one of your priorities at the beginning of the year. Right, Lori? Well, she's grinning.
You're absolutely right.
And she'd probably kick me if she could right now.
Question. That's just CVAG.
Yeah.
What's the password?
Is that one's not showing anything?
Ben, what's the password?
CVAG Palm Desert.
All one word.
All one word.
All right. Consent calendar. There's one item on the consent calendar for your consideration. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
From Palm Desert, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
From Cathedral City, a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 It's unanimous.
Do you finish your paper?
Your first action item on the agenda is election of a chair and a vice chair. This position, I'm not sure if we specified in our JPA or not, but I presume it would run through the end of the fiscal year, so you have 9 months of work to do. For that, are there any nominations for the position of chair?
Yes. It appears to me that Councilmember Kaplan has invested the most time and has developed the greatest level of expertise in this area. And I would be very happy to nominate him as chair for your consideration. Maybe that should be through the end of the next calendar year.
And that's okay at this stage.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Sorry, and just for the record, Palm Desert is in the midst of approval. What are the
subject to the changes?
There's a second reading of the ordinance that still
will pass the first reading.
Okay. Yeah. So
what we'll do is we'll take all of the actions that are taken here and verify them after the second reading. So I'll be part of the consent calendar at the next meeting. So that makes sense? So we have a nomination for the position of chair. Is there any other nominations? Hearing none, is there a motion that the chair be Shelley Kaplan from Cathedral City?
Sure, so moved.
We have a motion, a second. Motion, second. All in favor, please say
aye.
No, it's unanimous.
Aye. Thank you for not arguing with
me. You have a chair. Any nominations for vice chair? Any suggestions?
I would like to nominate Savvy Jonathan for vice chair.
All right. We have a nomination for vice chair. Any other nominations?
Okay. Hearing
and seeing none. Is there a motion to do so from the chairman? And a second from Palm Springs?
Sure.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Kaplan.
Just the term for those positions. It may make more sense to at least this first time let it go through the calendar year, or at least through the next election, because your term goes through then.
Yeah, that's true.
Rather than through June, especially in this first year, kind of get rolling.
That works. So we'll just make that part of the action that you've taken. Okay. Mr. Kaplan, you're the chairman.
Yes,
congratulations. So what you got for all the volunteering is more work here. So
that's right. So am I supposed to pick up the calendar? So we're now up to
7B.
7B, which is my staff report.
There you go.
Which is my staff report Katie and others wrote for me, so thank you for that. Just a quick update, and it was kind of referenced. We do have two members, of course, with all their approvals in. The City of Palm Desert took action. I believe the second reading is November 16th of your ordinance and resolution, and the City of Desert Hot Springs is considering next week. That would be first consideration, and it will take a month or so before they potentially become full members. The partners that we started this endeavor with, Western Riverside County and San Bernardino, are behind us. San Bernardino County, the Association of Governments, has chosen not to proceed with formation of a CCA. I think there were some political challenges to the matter, and it kind of wrapped up with other politics in Western San Bernardino County as well. With respect to Western Riverside County, they are proceeding as far as we can tell, but I don't believe any city is formally signed up, so they've not formed their JPA yet. The county, as you all know, has also formed a CCA, or forming one. They're about on the same schedule as us. They'll probably submit their implementation plan, which is a requirement for these CCAs, to the Public Utilities Commission very soon, and ours will probably follow very shortly thereafter. In fact, it'll probably be subject for action at the next board meeting. The other thing we've been doing, as you all know, is getting up to speed. I think you all know that CVAG doesn't have inherently expertise on CCAs. We're trying to get up to speed as staff and relying very heavily on consultants, particularly Don Dane. Thank you, Don, for all your assistance on this. And we thought it was important enough at the first meeting to have Don here in person. And Don, this time of year, doesn't really hesitate to come out to the Coachella Valley. He complained a few times in August. This we arranged for some wonderful weather for Don this time. And you'll hear from Jeff Fuller with the Energy Authority shortly. He's one of the experts that presumably you'll bring on very soon formally. Any other updates I should? One other item, and Shelley, our chairman, or Katie could comment on. I guess it was fortunate that the second annual California Community Choice Aggregation meeting was held here in Riverside, or in City of Riverside. I think you had a chance to attend that. Yeah. Charlie, I think you did too. Ryan, were you able to do that? Any commentary? I think Katie and Ben provided some notes from the meeting itself. I don't know if you all had a chance to review that. Shelley, any insights you want to share with your colleagues?
No, not at the moment. It was good, to hear the presentations and the information, but I didn't bring anything with me.
And that's okay. So. We did provide notes, and I think it just perhaps one sense of things is just about every region of the state is doing what you're doing getting this started. And there's perhaps, in addition to the pressure of reducing rates and overall costs for your ratepayers in your cities, there's pressure associated with legislation. And at the end of the cycle last year, there seemed to be an effort to make it very difficult to form cost-effective CCAs. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a legislative push again in the next few months to make it more difficult to form CCAs and to operate them cost-effectively. So having this started now before legislation is perhaps passed, I think it's probably a wise thing on all of your behalf. With respect to update on our progress, any questions?
The question on what you said earlier. So I didn't understand, and I'm sorry, I don't travel in that world, but the Western Riverside Council and Riverside County are both forming separate CCAs. Don't their jurisdictions overlap?
Yes, but so does the county with CVAC. And I didn't mention Rancho Mirage either.
Yeah.
Nor Indianwell, so let me update you on that.
And Blythe.
And Blythe, thank you. Can't forget Blythe. with respect to the question, the county wanted to proceed on its own CCA. They hired Good Energy initially to do their feasibility study and then went with them more or less on a sole source basis. They didn't go through the RFP process like we did. And so Good Energy is their prime contractor and consultant, and I don't know of any other cities that are joining the county plan. I don't think there's been any discussion about it. So West Riverside County is going to form their own with much of the same consulting team that we have, because we did the procurement together as a way to be cost effective. And at the time, when we first started, we weren't sure how we were going to form these CCAs. But this board decided they wanted to do something separate for the Coachella Valley, not join perhaps a larger group to the west. It could have actually included all the way up to LA County, who was also forming a CCA. With respect to Rancho Mirage, they appear to be lining up with the city of Lancaster, who was one of the first in Southern California to form a CCA. Indian Wells has chosen... What's that?
Peterson.
Oh, thanks. Indian Wells has chosen not to choose at this stage, and I think they're essentially punting for now to maybe see how CCAs develop, whether your CCA or others, and choose to join one perhaps next year. And the city of Blythe, frankly, is just so darn busy trying to keep the doors open that they don't have the ability to even marshal a little bit of staff time to consider this at this time. But we'll reach out to them again. Mr. Kaplan, that's the end of my report. Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, that'll take us over to item 7C, which is presentation of CCA logo concepts. Brian.
Thank you. So I'm Brian Ricks, Burk Ricks Communications, and us and Susan, whose last name I cannot pronounce, from Green Ideals, are working together on the local marketing for this. So we were charged with, A, coming up with a name, which Desert Community Energy, with the tagline, The Power of Choice, which we all thought was very strong, and then charged now with coming up with an identity for that name. Some of our goals that we set and that were set by CVAG were stability, that it needed to convey a sense of stability, a sense of the community about what we're about here in the Coachella Valley, that it be empowering, it has some relationship to energy, and that it conveys a sense of trustworthiness. And so we came up with a number of different concepts. We internally had a creative meeting. We looked at different options. Their designer, our designer went off. They did some. We all came back and narrowed it down. We did a presentation to CVAG, and they gave us some direction on color. And so this is kind of where we came out. So without any further ado, we'll start with the creative. This is the first one, Desert Community Energy. We like this. The colors are very strong. It gives a sense of the community, the mountains, the take, one take on the mountains. We have another take on the mountains as well. And what I'm going to do is we're going to show these and so and put them down, and then we're going to put them all over here for you guys to actually take a look at. So just so you see each one individually. Good. This was another
take. How many did you do?
Pardon?
How many did you
Five.
Do? Five.
Yeah. This is another take on the mountains, which is, again, with the gold, which is kind of a desert color, the blue highlighting power, has sort of a lightning bolt in the mountains, which gives it sort of a feeling of energy, and so that is another choice. We were asked then to also do that, this one, in a different color palette, which we did. Which is this with the purple and the gold? Which is a little
coincidence that we're seeing a lot of purple in our chairs from Cathedral City.
Just a little coincidence.
And I didn't talk to Brian.
He seems to like purple.
Well, the purple sort of resonated with everybody, interestingly enough. So
just kidding, it's fine.
And there's more purple coming up.
I'm sure.
This was sort of we wanted to do one that was a little more out of the box, and so this was a slightly different, totally different concept from what we had done before. We did one horizontally, you know, it's got the plug, and then this one has the plug this way, so we did a vertical concept on it as well. Again, this could be done in the blue and the golds, or the purple and the golds, different colors. What we also thought was important was that, like, for example, you frequently have to reverse out a logo to use it on promotional items. So we did this just so you could kind of see the different options reversed out. This is one that is no longer in the running, but just so you can see kind of what they look like when they're reversed out, because then you have to do them in grayscale sometimes. So you need to understand that it's going to be grayscale, it's going to be reversed out, so you want to make sure that the actual logo image itself is really strong to that. So with that, I will have Ben, you can put them up. I don't know if you wanted to discuss them now or how you wanted to do it. Chair Kaplan.
Well, do we need a choice today so you can move forward with marketing?
Do we need something for the next 30 days?
He's ready.
I say make a choice.
Because ultimately they're all fine.
Thank you for fine, Jeff. We appreciate that.
And one's finer.
What's finer than the others?
Which one do you think is finer, Jeff?
This one's. I like this one. It's just me. I like the colors. I think when you start getting the lightning bolts and plugs, it just makes it too confusing.
Type font and all, or
no? The fonts are a little bit different.
Does it look like the first font is a cleaner looking?
I like that one too, but I'm a little bit intrigued by the bottom of that one.
The plug.
The D. Yeah, that one. You like the fall one better?
Yeah, I actually like the plug better than the lightning bolt, but I think it just makes it all busy instead of just simple.
Okay.
So that's why I like
and
that.
I'm thinking of how people in the community are going to view it and see it.
And focusing on DOEs like Department of Energy, and just it brings all these other things to mind, which always I like less confusing. So that, but they're clever. Is that better than fine?
That's fine with me, and I really, really like the power of choice.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great tag. That's a really
great tag.
Thank you.
So it looks like the far one?
Yeah, that's good.
You got that tag. Okay. There you go.
Should we take a vote on that? Or?
Okay. You've provided direction. I think that's sufficient.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Did you have a recommendation? Just curious.
No, I actually like all of them.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
Good. All right.
I'll excuse myself because my section is done.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks. So we had a recommendation for that?
We did.
Okay. And it's still up there. And it's hanging up
there. Okay, that takes us to... to D. Agreement between CBAG and Desert Community Energy for Implementation and Management Services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As directed by the ad hoc group, or based on the feedback that you all gave us, we moved forward with the concept of creating a joint powers agreement and an agreement with CVAG, where CVAG would provide the administrative staff and the support for the organization, and that's what this embodies. This is basically a simple agreement between CVAG and Desert Community Energy, which provides for CVAG to provide those support services, including executive director services as well as administrative. It also includes the financial aspects and our billing and that sort of thing. So the agreement is a pretty simple agreement. It's one that we used modeled on some of the other agreements we've seen, but similar to one that CVAG already has with our Coachella Valley Conservation Commission, which is operated in a similar manner as a joint powers authority. Separate agency, separate board, but CVAG provides the administrative staff. So the agreement's pretty simple. It really just identifies that CVAG would provide those services. It is for a period of 5 years, but that could be modified as we go forward and identify staffing needs as the agency begins to build. The compensation is based on actual staff time spent, and as you may be aware, CVAG tracks our time based on the projects we spend so that we can allocate our time to various projects, and that would be the basis of this. We don't have a specific budget identified yet. That will be coming to you in the next couple of months as we launch and start to move forward with the agency. But that would be the principle in terms of the compensation, and we would have a budget that you would approve, which would identify the maximum amount for the funding for CVAG. Other than that, I'm available just to answer any questions. I think the other aspect of this that we're going to come to with some of the other agreements is we are going to be working with consultant staff. Don has been and will continue to be available to us as a consultant. Jeff Fuller and the team from the Energy Authority, which Jeff's going to talk about in a few minutes, will also be there to carry on some of the essential functions of the agency in terms of power procurement and so forth. So happy to answer any questions you might have, and this is an item for you to consider and approve, and this will also go to the CVAG board. Once we brought it to you, we would take it to the CVAG board for the meetings in November for their approval as well. That would be December 4th would be the executive committee meeting for CVAG.
A question? So the staff time, when you say it's at the actual rates, I assume that's gross and all employee benefits, I mean just the overall staff cost burden. Mm-hmm. And then you talk about, in addition to that, an allocation of overhead costs, that's in 5A.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a proportion of staff costs that's being passed along compared to the total payroll for all of CVAG.
Yes.
Okay. So if it's, 3% of total payroll, 3%
office use, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if it's 3 or 4 or 5% of the total, 3 or 4 or 5% of our rent here would be apportioned.
And so that's what I was getting at. I don't see a need to postpone it, but if there were to be a dispute, I didn't see a definition of overhead. So, overhead can be just rent. It can be rent plus everything else, supplies.
It's everything.
Okay. So,
Let the record note, it's everything that CVAG expends to maintain an office.
Yeah, and that is sometimes, when it's not specifically defined, it sometimes becomes a dispute if there's ever any disagreement. Because, when you say it's everything to run an office, that can mean one thing to one person, another thing to another person. But sometimes, when there's a formula to be followed, there's a very specific definition. I don't see any to hold this up. I don't see it ever becoming an issue. I know CVAG passes along its fair actual costs, but you may want to think about that if you're ever considering a modification.
Okay.
Just picking up on that, in higher education, obviously, if we had research grants, there's an indirect cost recovery, which is sort of the same concept. So you don't actually have anything defined. Well, and you wouldn't know until you've got a percentage, actually, of time expenditure associated with the project. So Do you have actually a software program that keeps track of your hours?
Yes.
By project, so.
Yeah. Okay. And so all of our costs. So the CVAG budget is your indicator. What we could do even before the next meeting is show you, for example, one of the invoices we internally do between CVAG and CVCC. It'll be the exact same
concept.
Yeah. So you get a sense of how the invoicing between the two organizations would be undertaken.
Sure. Okay. Sounds good.
We don't have a flat percentage like you're referring to.
Yeah.
So that'll be accomplished. And good that you're focused on the financial aspects. The ones you're focusing on are the pennies.
Yeah.
Not to diminish that. Just to make this organization, your new organization, will have a budget that's twice as large as CVAC's.
Yeah.
Right. And there's going to be a lot of money coming in and out of the organization. And Don's going to talk a little bit more about that. Yeah. One of the advantages to what you're doing is, a startup with $100 million running through the organization, you would hire a CVAG financial team to manage that, which would be really expensive. You'll have, three or four, probably have 10% of our financial team here working on the CCA. It's a huge advantage financially to the organization. And you'll have our auditors looking at three books and reporting to three boards and looking for discrepancies between what was billed or what wasn't. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have 100% of our costs are allocated to one of those three organizations. And CVAC staff is agnostic about what organization costs go to. So it's just it really is a software type calculation. Now, is that a fair characterization?
Yes.
And again, the hundreds of millions of dollars that we'll be focusing a lot of attention on. So with that, you do have a staff recommendation to approve.
Have a recommendation. Do we have a motion?
For some of
all in favor?
Aye.
And again, one of our directions, we'll follow up just to give you an example of how we do it with the CVCC as well.
Okay, and that takes us over to item E, agreement with the Energy Authority consultant team to provide the CCA implementation, wholesale power procurement, and associated technical operating services. Katie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For this item, we have Jeff Fuller on the phone from the Energy Authority, and Don is here. What we'd like to do is have Don start out to give you kind of an overview of the financial side of the CCA in terms of the general where that large budget would go and some of the issues that relate to that. And then Jeff's going to talk specifically about the agreement with the Energy Authority. We are still working with the Energy Authority and our legal team, Mike Jenkins, who's our new legal counsel, in reviewing the actual contracts, so we anticipate bringing those back to you at our next meeting. But we did want to give you at least sort of the beginnings of authorization to the executive director to negotiate and give you an overview of what that involves. So with that, I'll turn it over to Don.
Okay. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, board members. I'm going to stand up and go through this as Ben flips through the slides and kind of give a little. Some of this will be refresher, and then some of this will focus on the types of technical services and the costs of those services, as Tom was indicating. Next slide, please, Ben. So this is the power industry. Most of us don't see this at all. We see the lights that come on. We see the switch that's on the wall or the power tool we're plugging in, the drill or the sander or the light. You're picking up this piece of the business. These are the generators that produce electricity, the power marketers that you buy electricity from. You will overwhelmingly be buying from power marketers as you leave the door and start selling electricity. And we have a lot of different names for that. Sometimes it's called source side, the production side, the supply side, the power side, the market, ancillary services. There's a whole host of things that power plants can do that are all necessary to running the system. Reserves, extra capacity in case the system gets taxed on a real hot day out here in the desert. or sometimes called the cost side. You won't be building or buying a piece of a power plant at first, but when you do have some physical facilities in your portfolio, you will not only likely be using those to serve your end-use customers, but when you have extra capacity, extra power, you'll be selling that into the market. So it will represent an additional revenue stream in addition to just the retail sales portion of your business. So you'll have two sides of revenues coming in at some point down the road. The folks in the middle, those are Edison and the Cal ISO. Those are the freeways and the secondary roads that all the power travels on to get from the source to the sink, which is also what the load is called. And it's not the kitchen sink. It's the light that's on or the stove that you're working. And sometimes it's called end use, the demand side, the load side, and the like. You're not responsible for putting any of this in, but you may at some point, if your board so decides, take some steps to reduce that load by way of energy efficiency implementation or possibly different types of rate schedules that you can set up to encourage energy efficiency or other forms of energy savings. Where do your costs go? And we'll see another slide down the road, you're going to have a little over of $100 million in revenues coming to your organization. Total sales will be over $300 million if you include the Edison side. We're going to break that down. Overwhelmingly, it's the cost of goods sold. It's the cost of wholesale electricity. It is going to encompass the overwhelming portion of your budget. Staff, all the consultants, the data management, the marketing, the logos and the like, all of that will be, and including building some other infrastructure in your office support, the relationship with CVAG CVAG and the like, 5-7%. Again, a little bit of a hand wave here because we don't really have the definitive budget yet. You'll probably want to start building reserves at about 5% a year. Give yourself some cash as the market moves a little bit. It'll give you the ability to ebb and flow with it. And then some form of rate savings, maybe 1-2%. This would be off the total bill, including Edison's side. You'll see that a little bit down the road. And that's going to be your cost structure. Okay, it looks pretty simple on the front end when you see all the different disciplines that are involved in bringing that to fruition. There's some complexities there that I think can be handled very, very well by the team that you've chosen. Here's an illustrative example of how your rate structure might look. And I'm going to caveat this right out of the chute. Last time you met, we talked a little bit about, well, how much rate savings should we have? How green should the power be? Should it be renewable portfolio standard quality, or should it be simply greenhouse gas-free quality, which is not necessarily a renewable portfolio content category? A large hydro project produces no greenhouse gas, but it also doesn't count towards your renewable portfolio standard, which you have to meet statutorily. What I've done here, this is illustrative, this is SCE's residential rate. It's about 20.5 cents a kilowatt hour on average. To back into some numbers, you'll see it when we go into the next slide. I had said, let's say you've got a 50% renewable, 50% green product, some combination of RPS and greenhouse gas free. Let's, in theory, just set your rate at parity for this example with Edison. Okay, so I haven't put savings in, but I'm going to show you where the board can put savings in if they want. So those are the two caveats on this. I've assumed a renewable content, which no decision has been made, and I've set rates for this illustration at parity. And what that I think should give you the feel of is that you can set rates at parity or below and still be a very viable business. If you add up all the monies Edison is getting right now, It's about $325 million a year from all the customers that are going to be in your service territories. Once we split this up, you're going to be picking up the generation portion of that. You'll be providing the generation portion of that. That generation portion is going to be a little over $100 million. Edison will still be getting $219 million. So you haven't cut Edison out of the loop here at all. Edison's still getting two-thirds of the money, okay, for their services that they're providing in terms of the delivery of electricity. Well, let's see what
those,
that...
Those numbers, are they based on these three cities or four cities?
Four cities.
Including DHS?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, four cities including DHS.
Are you going to touch on the PCIA at all? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
So again, we look at the $327 million. Here's where it is. That's the total. This goes to the Southern California for their transmission and distribution system. Right now in the Southern California Edison tariff structure, there's the cost recovery surcharge, which as we speak is about $22 million. That includes the PCIA. I'm going to break that down a little more, but that is to be collected by Edison. It will not be on your bill to your customers, but it will be on the total bill that your customer sees. And that's a fairly substantial chunk of dollars right there. It's about 20% of your total cost structure. There's also a municipal surcharge. Those are the franchise fees and other fees. Those stay right where they are now. They're collected by Edison, and they'll continue to be collected by Edison. This $108 million will be your budget, or up to your maximum budget, at rate parity. So if we move over there, where are you going to spend that $108 million? I've assumed some numbers here, again, subject to finalization, about 0.5% to A&G, about 0.7% to internal staff, depending on how many you have. That may come up a little bit or go down a little bit. At rate parity, you have a $5 million fund standing in your hand that you can use to reduce rates, to implement energy efficiency programs, or do other things that the board so chooses. Okay, so that $5 million on $327 million is about 1.5% total savings, about 3% savings, or a little bit more on your $108 million, maybe 4 to 5% on your $108 million. You'll be spending some number, less than $3 million, on all your technical, legal, business services that you're going to need. That's the TEA folks and the like. There's also a credit support of a dollar a megawatt hour that you'll be spending money on. You'll be paying Calpine for data management at 1.6 million megawatt hours a year. That'll be a little over $1 million a year.
What is that credit support?
A credit support facility is TEA and others that implement CCA. You're going to be using their contract facility, their credit rating, using them as a counterparty. So that's the charge for that is $1 per megawatt hour.
Is that ongoing, or is there a phase and period where we develop our own credit and don't need that anymore?
As you develop your own credit and you become your own contract counterparty, that can phase down accordingly. If you build your own set of resources and you are the counterparty for those resources, that can phase out accordingly as well. And it really is, just a sidebar on that, it's really quite helpful. Negotiating these bilateral contracts and enabling agreements are very legally complex. Monitoring the credit of your counterparties and the amount outstanding to those folks, it's done on virtually on a daily basis, and making sure that within the parameters that are set by the board for your credit standards, a very significant task. You will become experts at it over the next 5 years, but initially when you're out the door, that fee, in my estimation, is very reasonable to use the expertise developed by others, but subject to the policies and procedures that you put in place. Reserves, I've assumed you're going to put $5 million a year in addition to this into reserves. And then again, you see the biggest chunk, and you're not seeing the bottom half. You're not seeing the bottom half of this bar chart here, $91 million of that $108 million is going to go out and buy your wholesale power supply. But what are your customers going to see? They're going to see a bill from Edison. I would guess this either looks familiar to you if you pay the bills, or your wife or your spouse if they pay the bills. What will it look like? It'll just have the address, just like it sees right now. There's not going to be too much different on this face page. There'll be the face page, the total amount due, and a little slip to slip off and put in the envelope with your check when you send it back, or whatever way you pay the bill.
Why would there two, go back to the line two and two and three, what's the difference between two and three?
There are two and three because this is Edison's account number. This is your account number.
Okay, that's what I mean.
So on your bill right now, unless you have a complex billing where you have multiple accounts on one bill, you'll see one account number.
Yeah.
This and there's three different numbers on here, actually. There's the customer account, and then there's the two service account numbers, one Edison and one yours. Those will both be unique identifiers. Total amount of the bill, of course, includes your charges as well. Edison will be collecting for you. When they get the money, they'll transfer it to your bank. Next slide. This, again, is the Edison bill. So far, we really haven't shown the Desert Community Energy portion of the bill. This is where the PCIA is collected, right here. There's a certain charge. In this particular case, it's $5.23. We're going to talk about the PCIA, the power cost and difference adjustment. That's where it's collected. Toward the end, you see Desert Community Energy does come into the bill, and details of your new charges. It's not new charges in the sense of new Desert Community Energy. It's your new bill. So Edison calls the whole thing your new charges, as opposed to the bill you got last month, which are your old charges. Desert Community Energy, there's the service tariff you're under, domestic, this is residential. And then it shows the Desert Community Energy generation charges and whatever your rates are that you choose to set times the kilowatt hours that are consumed will produce some numbers in here. You may or may not have an energy surcharge in there. And then you'll have a total bill. And that's the portion of this bill once Edison receives payment. It will be remitted to you folks once they receive payment.
So, time of use. I've already got time of use on my bill. How is that going to change this look?
It should not change at all. It will depend ultimately on the tariffs that you provide. For those of you who are a little bit familiar with Edison, they have a total of about 200 different tariffs. If all the commercial, industrial, street lights, time of use, non-time of use, high demand, low demand, primary, secondary, and the like.
Summer on peak.
It's the whole array.
Super on peak.
Typically, what you will do as a CCA, and this will be subject to more examination of actual rate design, is you will establish rates that mirror image Southern California Edison's rates, and you'll take a percentage of their rates. So if you want to end up at 97% of their rate, you'll take their generation charge and multiply by 0.97. So all of your time of use rates would simply be 3%
less
than you're paying. So, and that's probably, that'd be my advice out the chute. You start that way, keep it simple, okay, underutilized technique.
How is the cost savings communicated to the customer? Will it appear on the bill anywhere?
No.
How will they know if they save money? I mean,
you know, they really won't know. It's going to be a function of your marketing.
Well, so right now on Edison, especially online, I'm not sure on the paper bill anymore, but if you look at your use statistics, it'll actually show you, for example, what you used in 14 and 15 and
yes.
16 and 17 by Mondra,
yes.
Any of that kind of information. And I'm assuming that'll still be available
yes.
to them. So,
but that's your usage.
That's your usage.
Not showing them that they're saving
no,
money.
No, I understand.
Yeah, because Edison doesn't say, gee, we had a rate case this year, now you're paying 5% more than you did last year. I mean, they don't show that. So what they're showing is, based on current rates, yours and theirs, if you're the real customers, here is the total of your bill for this month. Not that this is right. more or less.
And that could be, I mean, your bill can go up from the prior month because you used more.
Yes.
It could go up compared to prior years because you used more.
Yes.
Ideally, there would be something, a line that says, had you not chosen DCE, your bill would have been
right.
X, yes. you know, exactly. $5 more or whatever. Can we generate that or not?
There is. You can pay Edison a fee to put an insert in their bill, or you can use your marketing consultants, and you can occasionally put something in the paper that says.
But I'm saying something specific to the customer. Maybe even if we chose to do that once a year, that says in this calendar year, your savings as a result of being a participant in DC or so and so.
We could do it either way. Insert in or our own marketing, or we could do both. But
the marketing is not customer specific.
The thing that's going to be most confusing is that in, I think, 2019, they're going to move everyone to time of use. And that's going to screw everyone up.
Okay.
Because no one's going to understand what the hell they did before relative to what they've got now.
I know. Explain me my time of use. I do too.
You know what? I think it's something to keep in mind because even if we just do it for 18.
Yeah.
Just no, especially that first
I think
year
we need to
let
do
people.
Some marketing that tells
yeah,
them.
Yeah, so something to keep in mind. But I think to not say anything might be a mistake.
Yeah,
it's you know, the discussion is interesting because it's a hard topic to broach because power bills intrinsically are not really readily decipherable when you look at them. So you save 5%. Well, 5% of what? Is it this line or this line or that line? So I think maybe you're onto something where you can put a billing insert that isn't even necessarily pointed at a particular customer, but the billing insert says Desert Community Energy saved its community 5% through that. So you genericize it so they're not going back and trying to duplicate the calculation.
I mean, it's very confusing. It's a little
bit. Well, what do your costs go to? You can buy physical resource contracts. You can use the day-on market from the CalISO, the day-ahead market. You can spend money on net energy metering tariffs. You can make them a little different and a little more designed for the local area than Edison's are, and you can develop feed-in tariffs amongst many, many other alternatives. There's a host of different resource types, and you have to demonstrate availability of these resources. So if you have a 500-megawatt peak load in the middle of summer in August, you have to demonstrate 575 megawatts of capacity. You have to physically have that under your control. In order to have completely reliable power service, you need redundancy. Okay? And redundancy isn't supply equal demand, which it has to be in real time all the time, but if a power plant trips, there has to be something waiting in the wing that virtually instantaneously picks up. You pick up that responsibility when you take on the supply side for your customers. And again, you have a very apt group of folks that are going to be able to bring you through that vortex and make sure you comply with all of those needs. You also must comply with the renewable portfolio standards. You have to meet those standards, which is 33% 2020, 50% by 2030. And if you want to do more than that, that's the board's purview to do that. The whole idea of this is to meet load, and then you can hedge or not. All of the conservative resource folks are going to hedge. I would presume all of you have insurance, fire insurance in your homes. Why? That is a hedge. Why? Because you know what happens if something unfortunately would be happening and you didn't have insurance. You don't want to self-insure. How do you know power is green? All right, so we're paying this extra $15 or $10 or $12 a megawatt hour for RPS, bucket one, bucket two, bucket three, or portfolio content category one, or whatever arcane name you want to call it. How do you know you're getting what you're paying for? How do you know someone else isn't counting it as well as you? Well, they've developed over the last 15 or 18 years the Western Renewable Energy Generation Information System, REGIS. And it is a very elaborate accounting system which tracks megawatt hours from source into the registry. This is like a renewable energy credit bank. And you can go in here and procure or buy these credits, or you can buy them from the resource themselves. They will, and that person that owns the resource will direct that sale into your account. So you will have a REGIS account. And in order to move things in and out of that, you have to be what's called a qualified reporting entity. You've got to kind of be like a notary public of the power world. So you've got to have qualifications to do that. And maybe someone in this room has, I don't. But you have to have that. So it's pretty solid. It's an elaborate accounting scheme is what it is to keep track of all those renewable credits to make sure they're only counted once. Next slide. And this just shows they track the generation facility, how many megawatt hours were there, what type of facility it is it green, is it non-green, and all the like. And this is a little add-on. We not only track in the power system the green electrons, we track every electron, as you can imagine. Everything is color-coded out there from source to sink. Now, the transmission system doesn't know what's on it, okay? It's just poles and wires. So at any given point in time, whatever is flowing on the line is just the composite of all the different power plants that are generating right now to keep your lights on. And in the western United States, there's about 6,000 power plants that are connected to the grid. Not all of them are on all the time, but many of them are on most of the time. Those are all tracked and coded. And in order to get that greenness to you, you need a certain amount of greenness. It doesn't happen instantaneously. You can actually adjust towards the end of the year. If you need a few more credits or you have some to sell, you can go back into REGIS and buy a few more. So really, if someone's 50% green or 100% green, you'll balance it out at the end of the year. You won't do it at the very end of the year. You'll try to get close. It's kind of like a budget. You'll try to get the numbers there, but then at the end of the day, you'll end up balancing out the year by buying or selling some of your extra or short credits accordingly. So it's an accounting game, but it's an accounting game with the background in mind to assure that if you say you're selling green, you can demonstrate there was a power plant and you got that greenness from.
It's really all a paper transaction.
Yes.
I mean, and nothing else is just...
Absolutely. The electrons don't care.
Yeah.
The electrons are not green. In fact, that'd be a good project.
And Don, one moment, just a point of order, I guess. We took advantage of Don's time to do this, give us all a lecture, because it's not a lecture in the pejorative sense, but to get up to speed on this, because what you're doing is important. And we're all trying to get up to speed on getting into this bit of business. I just want to make sure that there aren't time constraints. We probably have 45 minutes, and we do have some action items left.
So I have about 10. Because I only had this in for... I was scheduled for an hour by...
Yeah,
and staff, and so...
And we should have...
And I had a 3 and 3:15 out here, but I moved it to 3:10. But I can't go for it.
All right.
So that's what I was about to ask them.
Yeah, okay.
So thank you.
We'll get through this. Let's get through this, and we'll go through Jeff's very quickly. The next item, we could cover it, and all these items will be ratified at the next meeting again, because we'll, in some ways, lose a quorum here, given the Palm Desert situation. So let's just move on. Let's get through this, and then have Jeff.
Yeah, I think I've only got a couple. All right. So inherently, in any business, there's a set of risks. The power business has its unique set of risks, and you as a governing body, part of your charge will be to take an overview of those risks, look at the risk appetite of what you assess to be your customers, coupled with the financial situation of your business. If you've got a whole cupboard of cash somewhere, you may take a little different risk approach than if you're slender on dollars. So when you're coming out of the chute, you don't have a very large reserve fund. So you're going to want to vary, in my estimation, you're going to want to consider hedging a very large percentage of your power supply. What does hedging give you? It gives you cost certainty. Okay. Doesn't necessarily give you the lowest price of power, but it gives you the highest probability of meeting your budget. Okay, and this trade-off.
This goes back to our conversation previously about how much are you going to lock in for how long a period of time, yes. And how much are you going to go to the spot market for what you need.
Yes, and there's some pretty set procedures to kind of winnow that down into, well, if we're really risk-averse, we'll go A, B, or C. You know, there's an infinite possibility, but in reality, there aren't possibilities. And you'll probably establish a risk oversight committee. And those are the folks that get a steady diet of what did we buy, how much did we pay, did we buy enough, are our suppliers producing what they said they were going to produce, and are we getting delivered? Are our employees doing what they're supposed to? Are they overstepping their bounds? You're going to get those reports. You will want them on a meeting-by-meeting basis as the business becomes more routine is the wrong word. I've been in business 4 years. I've never seen it routine, but you may ultimately want to do that quarterly. So you want a lot of feedback, and this is for your reassurance because you're in charge. You're responsible. So if I had a bit of advice towards the end here, it's establish sound protocols. Take a long-term conservative view. You're not here to bet the farm. Okay? We can do that at home, but not here. Okay? Employ capable staff. Hire responsible, qualified folks. Set good examples and high expectations. Okay? In my opinion, the public sector is much better at following those good examples and meeting those high expectations in many cases than the private sector. Set good priorities and do the right thing. Again, utility is fairly conservative. And as I say, sometimes that's underutilized. And you can't know everything, so trust your staff, trust your consultants, but don't do that blindly. Also trust your business intuition and ask lots of questions. And even if you don't quite understand the answer, you'll generally get a feel of whether it's the right answer or not. And I just like to say, in California now, counting the CCAs, we're close to 60 public power entities in California, and they all do the service that you're contemplating and doing starting next June, and in my opinion, they all do it very well, and so will you.
Thank you.
Jeff.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yes.
Jeff, are you still with us?
I'm still here, Katie. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, yeah, so yep. We've got your first slide ready to go, so proceed.
Okay,
thanks.
And if actually in the interest of time, if you just want to go to the first org chart one, and we'll skip the title slide.
Okay, good. We're there.
So I think Don did a great job of laying out all the different parts, pieces, and activities that need to be done. Katie asked me to just take a minute and talk about the team we've put together, and I'll tie this back to who's going to be doing what roles. So this first chart just shows you the team we put together. Actually, it's a little bit misleading because in actuality, TEA will be the prime contractor, and then we're separately subcontracting with Calpine and Lean Energy to provide their respective services. But this chart still lays out everybody's role. So TEA is, you know, really in a nutshell, it's our responsibility to work with staff and the board to manage that $91 million. Power supply component that Don highlighted. So as far as doing all the power procurement, providing the credit support up front, and I got another slide here in just a minute that'll talk in a little more detail about the credit solution. There was a question earlier about that, so I'll dive into that. But as far as doing all the scheduling of this, helping with the risk management, Don mentioned about procurement. You know, we'll help with what to procure, how to procure, actually go out and do the procurement, do all of the accounting and scheduling and settlements around that. That's really TEA's role. Calpine's role is the back office function. Calpine will be the one that's responsible for interfacing with SCE and making sure that the quantities for each customer that Don was showing on those bills are accurate. accurate, that the quantities are accurate, that the rates are accurate, that the amounts that are owed to you for providing generation services are accurate, and then actually tracking those customer payments, making sure that customers are paid, that the money's been deposited. That's the role that Calpine will play. And then Lean's role is really to provide, primarily on the front end during the balance of the implementation period, really helping with just any overall, you know, project management, program management that needs to go on, balance of implementation, services type stuff, helping with any, you know, marketing, customer enrollment types of activities. So those are our three prime roles, or our roles. If you go to the next slide, the credit solution, again, I know somebody had asked a question. I apologize, on the phone, I couldn't tell who was speaking, but it asked about the credit solution. And let me say up front that dollar per megawatt hour is intended to cover the items here, and it is our expectation that over time you will accumulate your own reserves, you will establish your creditworthiness, you will eventually enter into counterparty contracts directly with counterparties, and that we can still provide all the services we're doing, but our role will be to move into more of what we term as an agency capacity, where we're still doing all the same activities, but we're doing it under your credit and contracts rather than ours. But the items that are included in that credit solution is the deferral of any consulting costs until after program launch, so the balance of the implementation plan, and actually through the first 60 days of program operation before customer revenues start to come in. There's the actual procurement, as Don mentioned, using our credit and contracts. So the counterparties, the power marketers that we contract with, will look to TEA's credit initially rather than yours. There'll also be payments to power suppliers that'll be owed before program revenues are received. There's about a 50-day lag between the beginning of service until revenues actually are started to be deposited in your account. CAISO, the California Independent System Operator, though, will be paying them weekly. So the first invoice will be owed to them a week after starting operations. And then the power marketer, the more traditional procurement that folks think about, is settled on a monthly basis. So we'll get into probably 6 to 7 payments to CAISO and a couple to counterparties before revenues come in. So the dollar's covering that. There's also just maintaining the credit relationship with the California Independent System Operator. There's a couple pieces to that. There's just, they look to how much energy is being procured in their markets and will assess a credit requirement based on that. There's also a $500,000 minimum requirement that needs to be posted in order for Desert Community Energy to be a candidate CRR holder. That's a topic for a whole other day, but for now there's another $500,000 requirement there. The California PUC requires all CCAs to post a $100,000 performance bond. The team will help with that. And then actually, related to that deferral of consulting costs until after program launch, TEA will defer its fees. Calpine will defer its fees. If there's any, though, marketing or Lean charges, Calpine is offering to fund up to $500,000 of expenses during the implementation period to cover those charges. So collectively, that's what the dollar is covering. Any questions on that?
Nope.
Okay. The next one slide, then, just shifting gears to the timeline. I'll leave this as a leave behind. I won't read through all of these. The next, you know, big activity once Palm Desert joins and Desert Hot Springs join will be to get the implementation plan completed and filed, as Tom and Katie and Don were talking about earlier on. Once that implementation plan is filed, I think everybody knows that it takes the CPUC, or the CPUC has up to 90 days to certify that implementation. implementation plan. But it's really about a six-month process from the time that implementation plan is filed until program launch. And that 6 months will be consumed by activities both internal there as well as activities that you'll be working on with Calpine in the back office and the integration with Southern California Edison, and then activities that you'll be working on with us to prepare on the power procurement side and a variety of regulatory filings there. So that is my presentation. I know that was kind of a quick overview just of our team members. This next slide just shows my contact information as well as the contact information for the principals of both Calpine and Lean. Should you have any questions or want to reach out, any of us would be happy to answer any questions at any time.
Chairman Kaplan, if I could add a couple of points of clarification. I know I certainly couldn't read some of the information on the slides, and I apologize for that. We generally don't do our meetings in here, and we generally don't have that much technical information on our PowerPoints. In this case, it'll probably be okay because these votes are going to be advisory. The staff reports will be provided again at the next meeting, and it'll be a ratification of any board advice provided at this meeting, at your next official board meeting. That said, that our PowerPoint presentation will be provided to anybody, public or otherwise, in the room, and we will post it on CVAG's website for now. We are in development of a DCE website, but that's not up and running yet. So, again, my apologies, and to any and all members of the public, if you want us, it's a relatively informal group. If you want to say something, wave and get our attention, or say something, and we'll call on you. So
I appreciate that because I was going to ask if you would distribute the PowerPoint presentations to everyone, so
including Don's.
Yeah, definitely.
And can I ask another question, Jeff? Is there any concern about hearing the number of CCAs that are in process for this coming summer? Is there any concern that the normal time frame associated with Southern California Edison is going to get extended?
Not at this time. I think it's a great question and something to be watched. But at this time, it seems to be manageable. The one thing that will be interesting, and I know you asked specifically about Edison, but with the PUC and that 90 days and whether they'll be able to adhere to that, there were a number of CCAs that filed implementation plans back in the August time period. That will be, that 90-day period will be coming up here in the next couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to meet that or not. But at this time, the answer is it seems like it's all doable. But again, I think it's a great question and something to be watched as we move forward.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I could just comment. We are on a schedule of having a regular call with Southern California Edison. So we've been doing that, and they want to be kept up to date as the approvals come along, and that, as Jeff says, that six-month time frame is still part of our schedule, and that accounts for the other applications that they have in the works. But that, at the same time, I think it's also fair to say that could be adjusted, just given their responsibilities.
What's the best guess as we sit here today as to, A, when this would go out to the public, informing them about the CCA and their choice as customers, and B, when this would actually be implemented. Best guess as to those two dates as we sit here today.
Jeff?
There is a schedule.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of, there's the mandatory requirements, and then there's the, you know, what just makes good business sense and good customer relationships. So I think my expectation sitting here today is that probably the implementation plan will be filed maybe in December, you know, probably more likely January at this point, you know, depending upon how things go. So that means you're looking at, you know, approximately a July launch of next year. As far as the customer notifications go, you know, there's the mandatory two notices before launch, two notices after. So that means the mandatory notices, the first ones would be going out in May, and then another one in June, and then followed by the post launch notices in August and September. I think the expectation is, though, that there would be additional notifications, you know, going on, just informing the public, you know, throughout this process as we move through the implementation plan process, and then ultimately, you know, work through the board will have to set rates. We'll have to, you know, go out and do the procurement. The expectation is there'll be board meetings around all of that, or discussion during board meetings around those types of things. Is that answering the question?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And just to add on, we will be working fairly soon in terms of outreach to the community, because at this point, most people don't know about community choice. So we'll be reaching out to stakeholders and other groups to start to just inform them about, in general, what it's about and that we're working on it.
Working
so that
Sean.
Once we, with Sean and Claire Griggs, so that once we get to the point where we are actually going to be notifying them by mail, they'll know what to expect and what we're talking about. Exactly.
I just have one question. Since I came in late, are we still contemplating a cost savings to our customers?
We
for our residents, because, and the reason I ask this is that one of our executives came from Marin County, and they were promised in Marin County a cost savings, and it never materialized. So they have a great concern that we are going to promise something and not fulfill that promise. So I want to make sure that when I'm talking to them, that I am confident that we will do what we say.
Don, maybe a perspective on that? Well,
the two items. One is, until we actually do the physical procurement of power, you really don't know what your costs are going to be. But here's the but. As we sit here today, it looks like there's the potential for a 1 to 3% savings. The board will have to look at the overall finances and then decide what rate it wants to implement. But as we speak here today, it looks like, and based on today's prices to serve the loads we think are going to materialize, very likely looks like there'll be 1 to 3% savings to somehow implement across and among the customers that will be in your service territory.
Okay. And one more. We were going to have our vote to join, I think it was like the first week of November.
Yes.
And now I'm told that it's going to have to be delayed because there's only going to be 4 council members and we are contemplating a 2-2. We don't want a 2-2, we want a 3-2. So we may have to wait until we have the 5 council people there.
This would be your second meeting in November?
November 24th.
Okay, so I just want to put you on notice that even though we had scheduled it for, we have a council member that will not be there, and we don't want to go in with a 2-2.
I appreciate that. And just to go back to what Don said, you know, when we had the conversation up front, we really had 3 things I think that we talked about as goals for this. One was the potential cost savings associated with it, and again, until we play all this out, we don't know what that's going to be, but we do assume there will be some cost savings. The second was the opportunity for people to have greener energy as they want it. And the third, of course, is local control.
Exactly. And it was unanimous, you might remember, Councilwoman Parks, from each of the potential CCA members, that was a list of priorities in that order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, all I want to say is my priority is cost savings for my constituents. So.
Yes, I think most of our...
The other two are okay, but mine is cost savings. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
With respect to the timeline of Desert Hot Springs, if they choose to move forward, they will have a first reading in late November, and then a second reading 30 days
early.
And hopefully that could occur before the end of the calendar year.
Yes.
What you just heard from Jeff Fuller with TEA is the implementation plan. We'd like to really file it before the end of the calendar year, and it would be best if each city participant had at least its first reading before that occurred.
Yeah.
Perhaps we could fudge a little bit, right, Jeff? If that second reading doesn't occur until maybe the first part of January.
Yeah.
Is that fair, Jeff?
Yes.
But our second reading would be 30 days, so it would be the second meeting in December.
Quite frequently,
I don't think we're having a second.
That's usually vacated because it's Christmas.
Christmas. Forgot about that lovely holiday.
So, but it sounds like it'll work out. Okay. If, as long as
I think we can go ahead and still finalize the implementation plan and expectations, and even probably go ahead and file it with the PUC. Need to work with Sean just on notifying them and that kind of thing to keep them informed on the status of Desert Hot Springs. But I think we should be able to move forward.
Great.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks. Yes. Just to finish this item, we probably need then a motion on the recommendation.
Yeah, again, I'd recommend what will happen is these will be advisory votes, and they'll be again put forward on your next agenda for ratification. But we'd certainly like to get direction from you.
Well, I'll move the motion on the recommendation under E.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Good. Very good. This PCI thing is the next item on your agenda. And you taking the lead on this with Don?
Yeah.
Is that okay, Mr. Chairman?
That's fine. Yeah. All right, the staff report before you is asking for a recommendation to authorize the executive director to enter into two cost-sharing agreements with Western Riverside Council of Governments and Los Angeles Community Choice Energy for services related to the California Public Utilities Commission proceeding R17-06-026, which is the review of the Power Charge Indifference Adjustment, PCIA. The PCIA is also referred to as the departing load charge or the exit fee from the incumbent utility. It is a mechanism used to ensure that customers who remain with the utility do not end up taking on the long-term financial obligations the utility incurred on behalf of the now-departed customers. The current legislation requires that departing customers do not experience cost increases as a result of an allocation of costs that were not incurred on behalf of the departing load. In other words, that when a new CCA customer leaves SCE, the remaining customers and stockholders don't get they don't bear the residual of the above market costs. The SCE PCIA charge is currently $1.23 per kilowatt hour, which is about $20 million, as Don has explained before, per year to be paid by the DCE, the Desert Community Energy. DCE's total cost of business cannot exceed 6.7 cents per kilowatt hour if it is to offer rates that are below Southern California's Edison's current rates. If there's a significant increase in the PCIA, Desert Community Energy might not be able to provide competitive rates to our new customers. The PCIA is regulated by the CPUC, and according to the utilities, market conditions have changed so much that it no longer works as it was originally created. The utilities began holding meetings in March of 2017 with various agencies involved in CCA programs, including CVAG, WRCOG, LA County, and EES Consulting, hoping to gain feedback and input for an alternate mechanism. On June 29th, 2017, the CPUC opened a proceeding to consider alternatives to the PCIA and whether an alternative mechanism would better meet the statutory goals of the cost allocation. The first hearing occurred on September 7th, and the CPUC has agreed to hold a PCIA workshop in the Los Angeles area at a date to be determined sometime in early November. DCE representation may be requested and highly encouraged. In order to ensure the best interests of DCE and to provide cost efficiencies for legal and technical services, staff has been working with staff from WRCOG and Los Angeles Community Choice Energy to develop agreements to cost share the legal and the technical services for the PCIA proceeding. And that's where we are with these contracts.
So the CPUC has to approve, I'm assuming, what they're charging, and they review the costs that SCE is trying to recover.
Yes, they'll have to approve any new mechanism that's brought forth that SCE brings forth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, proposes.
So if this meeting is supposed to happen in early November, that is coming up
very soon. Say that's like so next week.
Do we have any information on when or where?
We're supposed to get dates.
So I can give a little bit of background on that. Most of the meetings for the CPC are held in San Francisco. And because there's more programs going on here in Southern California, we asked for an LA.
That's good.
We had a date in early November. The administrative law judge who is handling this, I find this humorous, has jury duty. Can you imagine
administrative
law judge being
that's
right. for a jury?
Yeah. Just like
and for some reason, he can't apply for an extension like I always do. But anyway, they're trying to find a date. There's a location. The Los Angeles Community Choice Agency is working on a location, and it will be in L.A., but they are working on a date, which hopefully will be
maybe a little middle November,
at this point.
Okay.
But this is, I think, the aspect of this hearing process is going to go on for some time, maybe 6 months, maybe a year and a half, and that's one of the reasons we want to move forward. But one of the things that we're in the middle of right now is the data consultation with the utilities, which are all working together on allowing the community choice agencies to have data so that we can analyze the impacts of this PCIA charge ourselves and not just rely on what we're getting from Edison. And that is something that utilities have agreed to do. It's in the midst of an amazingly complicated process of deciding how that happens, but that's kind of where it's at right now. And this workshop would be more focused on, they actually did one on the phone, a very good utility presented overall view of how the PCI works and what their issues are, and that's what the workshop would be. But they do want to have good representation, and we're membership, our membership in California Community Choice Agency, CalCCA, is they are also representing the whole community. But we thought it was important in Southern California with WRCOG and LA to have our separate representation, because at a point the interests of the existing community choice agencies may not be exactly the same as those that are coming down the line. So that's basically what this effort is about.
Well, I definitely would like to go to that.
Okay, that'd be great.
So.
Please.
Yeah, I will. As soon as we know the date, we're just waiting. I suspect the date will be picked in the next day or so. They're
You'll
working hard to try to.
Right?
Yes, definitely.
Take a CBAG bus out there and like right on the side.
Well, we have a van.
What we do? The van works just about as well as the chairs in here. And my knees. Curiously enough. So we're cost sharing with the two other CCA, two other interests out there that seem to are aligned with us. They're in Edison territory. They're forming a CCA that are medium to large size, and yours is Western Riverside County and LA County, and they're having an attorney and a consultant help us represent our interest. Again, this would be an advisory vote, and we're in this peculiar place of starting a board meeting with 2.5 members and a fourth maybe here. We're going a little bit on good faith. WRCOG understands they'll proceed with these arrangements, and they're in much the same circumstance, and CVAG will understand that there's a bit fuzziness here, but all these charges will come back to the customer at some point. And we think that this is a relatively small investment over a big dollar amount.
It's a very critical
like
item
it is.
For us, so there's no question.
That's
it's very critical.
This is what makes or breaks.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is that fair,
Don? That's what it looks like.
Yes.
All right. So that you have your staff recommendation before you.
I'll move the recommendations again. Both one and two.
Second.
All those in favor?
Can I, just before we leave the substance of the meeting and get into scheduling and so forth, is anything that we've discussed today, would anything that we've discussed today be affected if Desert Hot Springs makes a decision not to join the CCA? Does the budget go out of whack? Is there anything that we should be concerned about in terms of Desert Hot Springs' pending decision?
I'll answer, and if Don could chime in, of course it's affected at a margin, and I can't remember exactly how much Desert Hot Springs load is, but it's about 10 to 15% of the total load or revenue, or however you want to calculate, it would have that effect. Substantively, no. The CCA, I believe, was, based on my consultations with Don and TEA, was probably affected with two members, let alone four.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So we were good to go.
Yes.
Is that fair
enough?
We still want Desert Hot Springs.
Oh, yeah. And at this point, I'm almost sure I've got three votes. If we have the five in attendance. I have my usual two. I don't know one from hand from another.
We had, I think under item D, I think it's under item D, we had exhibit D, which was the pro forma voting shares for the weighted. Now, that one showed Blythe and Indian Wells as part of the package, and I'm wondering if we can get that redone with Blythe and Indian Wells out, because then it'll give us more accurate information. And
Is that in the JPA?
Just as you, just to, I can just update as Don has identified, it goes to about the number of customers without Blythe and Indian Wells, it's about 10,000. It goes to about 112. The numbers that Don has been providing, I believe you've included a opt-out.
We've
discounted a percentage for the opt-out, and we're using a higher, I think we used 10%.
Actually, initially we used 15%.
Right, but I thought we had dropped,
we dropped it to
that's
about
10. That's a conservative estimate.
Obviously the numbers would be affected if Desert Hot Springs, I mean the gross numbers. My question was, would anything change in a way that would concern us or make this unfeasible? And I'm hearing the answer is no.
No.
No. Okay.
But we want to be in.
We want you. We want you. I just want to make sure
Yes. Just don't count us out yet.
Yeah. I'm counting you in.
Thank
you.
We're counting you on being able to twist arms. And
exactly.
I think I've got the three.
Do your thing.
And we could take care of, once we have more definition, particularly Desert Hot Springs, we could do some cleanup on various exhibits at a later point.
Okay.
And if you have any marketing, if you have any marketing material at this time that I can give other than this stuff, you know,
we'll work with you on
to those three, to the five, basically, to try to get the other two to understand that this is a good thing and we're offering our residents a cost savings. Number one.
We'll work with you, Councilman.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think we're on to talking about dates and times. Mm-hmm. How does December 4th, Mondays tend to be good CVAG days because all of our city councils don't meet on Mondays. So
I've got executive committee.
You do at 4, but what about 1 o'clock?
That's fine.
Wait. Mondays are
December the 4th at 1 p.m.?
Wait. So there's the executive committee at 4:30.
Yes.
Maybe I have it wrong.
4:30.
It is.
Was it
4:30? It's 4:30.
One can be a little tough for me. I mean, if can we do it so that they're back to back? We
could.
Like
how
2:30 time?
You don't. Oh, we could. 2:30.
2:30 to 4.
Yeah.
That's fine with me.
We could do that.
Then it gives us a half hour if we run over. Or does that mess you up?
Yeah.
Yeah. How much prep can you do for it? It all depends on
I could potentially go down. If this meeting runs over, we could split duties. If that's not going to be the problem. Just thinking, I did ask Jeff specifically about 1 p.m. We could double back with it.
Why don't we,
if it's okay with you all, we'll make it 1 p.m., but I'll ask him if later would work. We push it to 2 or 2:30. Is that fair?
Yes.
All right.
Are you going to send out a notice on it?
Or we will. We will. And we'll, and again, we could even confirm how you want to handle this. It could be the same day as the executive committee from here on out. Make it easy. I suspect that you'll actually be meeting more frequently than our executive committee that does not meet every month.
I think so, too.
In particularly in the formation stages, you'll have a lot of decisions to make. But Mondays, we'll shoot for Mondays, and it could be the fourth or last. It could be the fourth
Third
Monday.
Or fourth, yeah.
It just can't be this time because we have a little detail on 30 days that we have to deal with. But will you put, would the fourth Monday after December 4th work generally for all of you?
Okay, so now we're looking at January.
New Year's?
Yeah.
New Year's Day? What, no?
No, well, the fourth. The fourth Monday.
The fourth Monday.
Is
the
27th.
No. The fourth. The executive committee meets on the last
January.
Monday.
Okay,
so
which
the
sometimes.
The fourth Monday is sometimes that,
right,
sometimes
right,
it's not.
Right.
Okay, now
it's
you're
the
looking
22nd.
At third Monday up there.
I put the third Monday. I apologize.
Okay,
that's
I'm
because
confused.
That's a we have been meeting on the third Monday.
And it could be the third Monday. It doesn't.
And the
third Monday, it could be the fourth Monday. Are there any intervals on Mondays that we should be concerned about with the three of you?
Mondays are always good for me.
Yeah, Mondays.
The next meeting is we'll give you a proposed meeting schedule for the rest of the year, for the rest of the year. The next year, all of the next calendar
2018.
Year.
Right now, we just want to set the December.
You get to be first, and I put it down.
It's going to be a little better.
Better for you?
Okay. If you look at the calendar. Like the third one in February is President's Day, and I don't know if you guys are open because you're on that government.
Sometimes we are. I think we are open for more than you might think. We'll look at the fourth Monday, target that. We'll give you a meeting schedule that's
okay.
proposed at the next meeting.
And 2:30 is better than 1 for me.
All right.
So just for the record.
We'll follow up with Jeff. Follow up with him right now. I think that was all we had on that. And presuming this... this is a work in progress, we'll work with the chairman on how these meetings are conducted. They'll probably be, as Don's told us, this is all more of a business in many ways than a government.
Yeah.
And we do have a member of the public.
Thank you. My name is Kim Floyd. I live in Palm Desert. And I'd just like the board to consider having some type of either customer or resident advisory council when it's appropriate. And I don't know if that exists at other CCAs or not, and the mechanics of it, but just a thought. Thank you.
Thank you.
And for the record, Don Dames nodding his head that has happened.
Virtually in every CCA I'm aware of, there is a community advisory committee.
It makes a lot of sense.
But we're not talking about just one city.
No.
Thank you. Even though I know you're Palm Desert, you have to include somebody from Desert Hot Springs.
For sure.
Okay.
And Cathedral City and Palm Springs.
And Cathedral City, of course. I'm just looking out for me.
I do like that idea a lot. I think the more community participation and transparency we have, the better. So maybe staff can think about it and have a recommendation at one of our next meetings.
Okay, can I clarify now? We're looking at December 4th as an absolute at 1 o'clock at this point. The continuance for 2018 will be determined later by our next meeting.
Right.
Even though we're looking at the third or fourth Monday, we haven't actually determined a specific third or fourth.
But the other option was on December 4th, whether 2:30 would work?
I don't care what
it's okay for you. Okay.
I think that's good for the three of us. The question is it going to be good for Jeff? So.
And I might know it immediately. That's just on a text. So,
and I will make 1 o'clock work if he can't.
I understand.
I'll make that meeting. We'll just have to shuffle.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, that's all we have on...
And Mr. Executive Director, I would probably want to meet with you the week before that meeting to review agenda and stuff. So.
We will make that happen.
Okay. Do we have any information and no additional information items? Any additional announcements?
I didn't mention, but you all were noticed I'll be attending a CCA conference November 16th in Santa Clara. And notably, some of the there's a lot of interest, seemingly, in that event as those that are marketing power are starting to realize that most of the power in California is going to be bought by
CCAs
and public entities as opposed to the industrial, the investor-owned utilities. So, yeah.
Even in the PCIA presentation that we saw from the utilities last week, they had 80% being community choice.
They see the writing on the wall. And, so I'll certainly provide a report to you on that conference as well. I know
there was
you all could attend.
One piece in terms of your presentation, when you talked about us buying power and then if we have too much selling it to others, is the third component of that, which I'm sure we won't be talking about for years, but that's the possibility of us actually creating our own generation facilities at some point. So. And green generation facilities. So we'll look at that way down the line.
Just a quick thought before we close up. So, you know, what we're doing here is kind of cutting edge, especially for our valley, and it's green and environmentally proactive. So I hope that as part of our outreach to the community, we engage with the Desert Sun, whether our chair meets with their editorial board, whether we do a Valley Voice, and kind of pat ourselves on the back, let the community know that we've done something that they should be proud of. I think that might be helpful both with recruiting customers and perhaps future cities that may that are still on the brink.
Proactive and positive.
Yeah.
I think so it's just this will go with the lean once you know we move to that point of starting to communicate. We need a whole package of communications processes that need to be implemented. So
yeah,
I would agree.
And we don't have lean, of course, on the phone, and Jeff and Don should comment. The response to that in part is absolutely, but let's make sure that we deliver.
Yes, that we know what we're doing.
And
first.
We make sure that the power market cooperates
absolutely.
And the PCIA charge cooperates.
Exactly.
So,
that's why I said at the appropriate point.
And so it might be spring when we're starting some of those.
Whenever,
Late spring.
Perhaps. We have nothing else as staff.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Problem.
We are adjourned.
Good work.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks very much, Jeff.
Thanks,
we're all finished.
Right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Appreciate your time. Thanks.
Katie. Thank you, everyone. For
thank you.
Thank you.
Plan everything.
Let the record know it'll be 2:30 p.m. on the Monday.
Okay.
2:30 p.m.
Great, so we'll send a reminder about that tomorrow.
Reflect that.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
It's gone.
Wait, it is?
Wait.
Thank you.
This just happened.
They were great, Katie. And Don, your input, your expertise is invaluable.
Wow, you folks have done great. I mean, you're really set.